We learned a long time ago that the things that can make our houses and bodies cleaner can have the opposite effect on the environment. Just think of the things we used to spray and spread around the house that we would no longer think of using because of toxicity. But even the stuff we put on and in our bodies can create environmental issues. So here's where we talk about microbeads, tiny abrasive plastic beads that make toothpastes and facial scrubs get us a little cleaner and smoother. California passed a law last year that bans the microbeads 4 years from now. Dr. Chelsea Rockman is a marine ecologist and ecotoxicologist. She is the Smith Fellow in Conservation Biology at the Aquatic Health Program at the University of California, Davis. Dr. Rockman, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
You are.
Okay,
very good.
Good. How common are microbeads in consumer products and what kinds of products?
You know, they are becoming less common, which is certainly something that's applauded as we move forward with this legislation. But you do see them on the shelves of every major store, among the face wash, among the body wash, and also sometimes even in deodorants and toothpastes and lotions.
Did they replace something that was more natural than making little plastic beads?
You know, before there was plastic microbeads, we would see abrasive scrubbers in the form of broken down seeds and shells and sugar and salt. So you may be familiar with, you know, St. Ives apricot scrub, which has never had microbeads in it. And so as they've started to remove the microbeads off the shelf, they're just being replaced with the stuff that we used to use in the past.
Okay, so things that are at least a little more friendly. What happens to the microbeads, and where do they go that makes them an issue?
Yeah, great question. So you wash them off your face or off your body. They go down the drain. That is then goes down the pipes, you know, underneath our city to our wastewater treatment plant. These beads are so small that when they're treated by the wastewater treatment plant, they either hang out in the surface of the water in the plant, which is then emitted directly to aquatic habitats, and most of them will settle out into the sludge. And the sludge, or the biosolids, is often land-applied, so spread on agricultural fields or golf courses as manure, which then, during rain, which you're having now, they can run off again into an aquatic habitat.
Wow. So microbeads sound almost single-mindedly determined, if they had minds, to end up in aquatic habitats.
Some are certainly very likely to, and when you add up the amount that likely does go into aquatic habitats, it's a very large number per year from the United States alone.
So are microbeads, for example, as big an issue as plastics in the ocean, with animals ingesting gobs of plastic fragments and having stomachs full of them as they're cut up for necropsies?
Mm-hmm. They are one part of that issue, right? So there's many different sources of microplastic and plastic debris in general to our oceans and lakes and rivers. Microbeads are one of them, and they seem to be one that was kind of the low-hanging fruit for legislation to ban them and cut it off at the source. So we're removing one part of the problem, but it's a good, I guess, you know, first step to starting to mitigate the rest of the problem.
Are there issues for humans ingesting microbeads? I mean, when I think about them being in toothpaste, I mean, some of that stuff doesn't get entirely spit out. I mean, does it do anything to us?
Right. So it can get into our bodies in two ways, right, just from immediate use. Also, when we sample fish and shellfish from fish markets, we find microplastic debris in the gut content of some of these animals. So we may eat it, you know, after we dispose of it or during use. Whether or not that causes an effect is still kind of up in the air and something that researchers are still trying to figure out.
All right. What about the effects on fish and other aquatic animals?
Yeah, that's where we have, I guess, a greater handle on that. And, you know, microbeads specifically have been studied less, but microplastics of the same size and shape and type have been shown in laboratories to cause effects to fish and shellfish in terms of causing tumor promotion. They can transfer chemicals that are toxic to an animal. They can cause stress in the liver, reduction in feeding behavior. So we do know about some effects and some ecological impacts of microplastics to aquatic animals.
Dr. Chelsea Rockman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, marine ecologist and ecotoxicologist at the University of California, Davis. We're talking about microbeads, which have been banned by the California legislature, with the ban to take effect in the year 2020. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this issue for the environment. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You know, I noticed in the process of looking for some information about microbeads yesterday that there are some products, like, for example, example, the Crest toothpaste website offers its own discussion, its own FAQ, frequently asked questions about microbeads, insists that they're safe, but also points out that they are voluntarily taking them out of the products anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think this is supply and demand. I think never before I got involved in this issue did I realize how much power we have as a consumer. And I think when environmental activists and consumers started to latch onto this issue, people very much wanted it out of the product. And so the industry reacted before legislation passed. And so before this law passed in California and now passed federally, Obama just passed a bill. I think the producers were willing to take them out anyways because people just simply don't want them. I think there's an ick factor.
And we're not talking ick theology. We're talking ew ick, right?
We're talking ew ick, yes.
So how did the move in California get started?
You know, it started a year before it passed. So it actually failed the first time around. It lost by one vote. And it started from a couple environmental activists and nonprofit groups. So Steve Wilson, who at the time worked at Five Gyres, now works for Story of Stuff, kind of is instrumental in starting this movement. So there was several groups, Clean Water Action, Five Gyres, Story of Stuff. I'm sure I'm going to forget some, which is awful news. A big group of people that really worked hard and championed this bill got some of the people, you know, involved. And so Richard Bloom agreed to sponsor the bill in the House and push it forward. And then once California had the momentum going and passed a very strong bill, it was very easy to pass it on the federal level. It was unanimous in the Senate, which is amazing with our polarized Congress right now, to have an environmental law be passed so quickly and unanimously by every single senator. So I think it's been a real victory for bringing this issue into light in the government level.
What are the differences that you're aware of between the federal bill and the California bill, if nothing else, in timing?
So in terms of the actual text and the writing, there are very few differences. The California bill is very different than some of the other state bills in that it bans all plastic microbeads from being produced instead of other bills that allow for more biodegradable plastics, et cetera. That language was really put forward in federal. In terms of timing, California took 2 years, whereas at the federal level, once California passed, it was a matter of, I think, 1 or 2 months.
Really? So interesting. And then after one effort had failed, as you pointed out, this is Assembly Bill 888 we're talking about here?
For California, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then in the U.S., it's the Microbead Free Waters Act.
Okay. When is that one supposed to take effect? I know California is supposed to take effect in 2020.
Yeah, so it actually takes effect in 2018, and so it's quicker. And the federal bill actually trumps all state bills. So the federal bill will go into effect. Obama signed it, I think, a couple days before the new year.
Okay, so things certainly moving on getting microbeads out of the products, and in 2 years, it sounds like. It sounds like the consumer companies had already started moving this way anyway, so it's not a... It's not a huge deal to them. Given that, though, did they put up a bit of a fight? I understand the California bill certainly got a few things hammered out of it on the way to final passage.
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing, you know, the difference between what industry had agreed upon in the first place and what they're now sort of being forced to do by this legislation is not include what we'd consider maybe the biodegradable beads. And the issue is that the term biodegradable is just not defined in a way that really makes them not bioavailable to animals because they degrade very slowly. And so the California passage and the U.S. passage doesn't allow for, you know, any innovation of a biodegradable bead, which some would argue can stunt innovation. It's a very strict bill. And so this was really the big difference. And this is where, you know, industry just agreeing to do it versus the legislation, that's the difference, is that there's no more plastic, period.
So biodegradable, I mean, how reliable and how well-developed are biodegradable plastics at this point?
You know, they're not very well-developed in terms of mass marketing. So there are some companies, small companies. There's one in San Francisco called Mango Materials that produces a product which is truly biodegradable. But for an example that people will recognize, there's the PLA, the polylactic acid, which is on those cups that you see at green events where you throw them in a composting bin, and they're called greenware. That actually biodegrades very slowly. It doesn't biodegrade in nature. It has to be industrially composted. So if that material doesn't go to an industrial composter, it will never break down. So if I put it in my compost in my backyard, it's going to stay there just as long as a normal plastic cup.
So it's a conditional biodegradability. It wouldn't necessarily decompose in the wrong circumstances.
Absolutely. And so right now the biodegradable issue, because it's so fuzzy on what that means, it's almost more greenwashing, where people don't really understand that what they're using may be worse than a normal plastic. It's not as recyclable, and it's not actually breaking down.
We're talking about microbeads and legislation at the federal and California levels to ban microbeads. The federal bill takes effect in 2018, as Chelsea Rockman just told us. She's a marine ecologist and ecotoxicologist at the University of California, Davis. You can join us at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I have two
Mark,
questions.
Go ahead.
One,
are you there,
are
Mark?
Microbeads found in the flesh of fish?
Mark, you sound like you're a million miles away. You said something about the flesh of fish?
Are microbeads found in the flesh of fish?
Okay, are microbeads found in the flesh of fish? That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard happen to a phone, but we got the message across. So his question then, Chelsea, whether they get in the flesh of fish, and what about shellfish too?
Yeah, it's a great question. So at the moment, what we know in terms of fish is that, yes, we find them in the gut content. So a researcher working in the Great Lakes, Jerry Mason, found microbeads in the guts of fish. I've also found microplastic. I'm not sure if they're microbeads. It's hard to tell the difference in oysters, which in that animal, we eat the entire thing. So there we might say, yes, the flesh. But in terms of whether or not they're migrating into the meat of fish, that's still something we do need to look for. We know that if it's small enough, it can transfer into the meat, but microbeads are likely larger than the material we'd expect to do so.
Okay, so you mentioned that there were more organic sorts of alternatives. I think you mentioned sugar and broken shells. Are there any particular issues with things like using sugar or salt or, I don't know, broken pecan shells or something that they might create issues for aquatic creatures as well?
You know, I don't know much about it beyond the fact that I know some seeds from fruits can have arsenic in them. So there's some worry about the arsenic levels, as well as some of them are allergens. And so I know one of the arguments by industry for having the plastic microbeads is that they're more hypoallergenic than some of the natural materials in the environment, which we know some of us have allergies to.
Now, California got in this year and earlier as well in an effort to get rid of the microbeads. I understand that there's been a bit of a wave here, and I'm sure what made this a little easier for Congress to go ahead and pass a federal law was that a lot of states had already jumped on the bandwagon. Any count on how many states had already taken at least some action or initiated something in terms of limiting microbead usage?
Yeah, it's about 20 to 25 states. Some of them unsuccessful, but that have proposed legislation.
All right, so 2020. And so it sounds like things are kind of locked up here then, that microbeads are going to disappear in about 2 years. Any particular difficulties you see in final implementation here?
You know, I really don't, because I think, you know, they're really, one of the things I really applaud with the environmental groups that were working on this issue is that they also worked with industry. And so kind of getting everyone on board, which made it so likely to pass in the Senate. And so I don't really see any issues. I think something, you know, a drawback you hear people chat about is that this bill doesn't include all microbeads. It only includes rinse-off products. So, you know, microbeads and deodorants and lotions are not included. But those are probably also less likely to end up in an aquatic environment. So I think the bill is very good. It's very strong. And I don't really see a problem with implementation moving forward.
I guess that's the part we haven't covered then is what other sorts of products other than toothpaste and lotions contain microbeads?
Yeah, so I mean I just had mentioned that, you know, deodorant. There's mm-hmm. also makeup. When we think about glitter, we don't generally think about microplastic, but glitter is made out of a synthetic polymer, so makeups. Also industrial and household cleaning products, which do go down the drain, which do not fall under personal care product or cosmetics. So it definitely does not stop all microbeads from ending up in the environment, but as I said, it's a great first step at cutting off one source of microplastics to our oceans.
Are we talking about things like abrasive cleansers, that sort of thing? Would those still continue to contain microbes?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So how far do things logically go here for somebody like you who's looking at the effects of our products, whether for ourselves or our homes, on aquatic environments? I mean, what's the next range that you think should be paid some attention to?
In terms of mitigation?
Yes.
You know, something that's gotten a lot of attention lately are fibers. So we're finding a lot of synthetic fibers from textiles, so from our clothing and carpets, et cetera, in environmental samples. So we find them in fish, we find them in water samples and sediment samples. And a researcher in Australia, Mark Brown, realized that these are coming from our clothing. One source is coming from our clothing and our washing machines. So if you imagine the lint trap on your dryer, well, the same thing happens in the washing machine, but we don't collect the lint. It goes, again, to down the drain into the wastewater treatment plant. So thinking about legislation to put a filter on a washing machine would be a way to stop another source of microplastics to the ocean.
Okay, all kinds of things to think about. Did the move against microbeads come about a little faster than you might have expected, Dr. Rockman?
Yes, I would say so, especially if you compare it to the move to ban plastic bags, which has been incredibly slower, and there's been more failure, I think, than success. So, you know, yes, and I don't know why. I would love to do a psychological study on why this one issue really just latched on and successfully moved forward.
We'll leave that for the other departments at UC Davis. That's where Dr. Chelsea Rockman is, a marine ecologist and ecotoxicologist, and we've been talking about microbeads. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.